I don't know if I even want to tell you or not. All right, I'll tell you. The first one, you're playing against Dekel and I.
Dude.
Where you guys don't have a kitchen. So you can go all the way up to the net if you want.
Oh, really? Okay.
Second one, you're playing against Dekel and I, where you can serve overhand. You can serve however you want.
Okay.
No rules on the serve.
Right. I don't know if my pride will allow me to go into the kitchen. I want to beat you guys. I want to actually beat you guys.
Well, that's not going to happen. So if you want to do it, if you want to beat us, you're going to have to go into the kitchen.
Yeah.
You're going to have to use that to your advantage.
Dude, Dekel, something about Dekel's game, it's just, it throws me off.
That happens to a lot of people with Dekel. Yeah.
He's so big. He gets everything. His hands are so fast. He hits the ball so hard. His serves are absurd. That's going to be probably my biggest issue. That's what I want the handicap to be. Dekel just has to get the serve in. He can't like hit it with power.
Ooh, okay. Maybe we'll make Dekel serve underhand. Oh, wait.
Meet your new favorite playing partner, Chuck. The Gamma Chuck pickleball is a game changer. With 38 holes and a symmetrical pattern, Chuck ensures a true flight every time you play. It's designed to withstand extreme outdoor temperatures, guaranteeing durability without warping or cracking. Without warping. Grab your Chuck load today at gammasports.com. You can use code DINK10 for 10% off your order. That's all caps DINK10 for 10% off your order at gammasports.com.
Okay.
Don't say what you're about to say.
Yeah, Thomas told me some very sensitive information off screen that he won't let me share. Honestly, release the tapes. Release the tapes. Let's go.
Oh, it's not even sensitive. I just don't want to talk about it.
Oh, my goodness.
But there are plenty of other things we can talk about, like your performance this weekend.
You know what? Here's the thing, though. If we talk about it when I do well, then we need to talk about it in all the tournaments where I do badly, right?
We can do that.
We can't just selectively do this.
It's your pod, too. You have all the power to bring up whatever topics you want.
Well, fair. But today we're just going to run through a Maddie Pickles podcast. Maddie Pickles, we hit up because we were supposed to have Anna Bright on the podcast today. Yep. She has been busy.
She's going to regret that decision.
Yeah, no. She's been over in Lakeway playing pickleball, winning gold medals when she could have been sitting in this very nice room with us talking about pickleball instead.
On the fan voted number one pod.
Absolutely.
But she went and won two gold medals. Because Maddie Pickles just texted us and said there was another upset.
Yeah, that's wild. So Austin Open going on this weekend, the rain delay open, lots of rain, and Andre and Anna started out the day beating Anna Lee and Ben in three straight games, and then they play the final, the women's final. Anna and Rachel play against Anna Lee and Catherine and beat them. And actually, this just happened. I don't even know what the score was of that. Yeah. Do you?
No. I haven't even looked. I mean, all I got was that text, just like you.
Maddie Pickles. Let's text Maddie Pickles. Yeah, honestly,
let's get the info.
Absolute backbone of this podcast.
I don't know when this will air, because tomorrow, which will be Tuesday, we have our Waters episode going live. Lee and Annalie Waters. And then this one will probably go later this week, but we also had Fed on, so that one's in the hopper.
Yeah, that one's going to take a couple days to translate to English.
Yeah. But just like this episode, we were expecting Anna on this episode. Didn't show up. We were expecting Hayden with Fed. Hayden bails like last second.
Anna's is slightly more permissible than Hayden's.
I would agree. Slightly. I feel like Hayden was just like, I don't want to do it. And then just, yeah. I don't even remember what he said.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. But okay. So this was a lot of different interesting results. You took down the Johns Bros.
Christian and I played well. You know, actually, the funny thing is the last time we played together was over in Mesa where we lost first round. So we rebounded pretty well. But we almost lost to Tyler and Julian Arnold over at Dreamland. We lost the first game, won the second game, got down 6-0 in the third game, and I think we won like 11-7. We were on a roll after the side change in that one, and sort of kept that momentum going. We go right from Dreamland to over to back to the main site because it had dried up, and then we play the Johns Brothers.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean, honestly, we had Colin on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and you know, we've talked a few different times about the type of game that it takes to.
We've literally diagrammed it.
We have. I diagrammed it, and we did our best job of implementing that. And really, I think the biggest part of that strategy is pulling Ben out wide. Right, to open up the court a little bit more, and having somebody who can attack from the wing on Colin, right? So from the outside backhand corner of the kitchen, you either need to go at Colin or go pretty wide to Ben. Christian does a really good job of that by running around and hitting his forehand. Mm-hmm. I do a good job of it by rolling my backhand, and so that just sort of spreads the court a little bit more. And obviously, like, I'm not saying like, yeah, we cracked the Ben and Colin code whatsoever. No, they did not play their best. We played unbelievably. Like, we played at our ceiling and they weren't, right? So they didn't execute as well as they normally do. We executed as well as we ever could, right? So I'm not saying that we cracked the code, but I do think that like the general strategy was good and a ton of things went our way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you guys were playing pretty confidently though. It didn't look like. Sometimes when they lose, it's like you can tell like their attitude's off. They're kind of like, it looks like they don't even want to be there. It seemed like they were pretty into the match. You guys were playing confidently. You weren't afraid to pull the trigger. Your resets were unbelievable. It was a good match overall. So after you win that, do you and Christian, are you guys like texting like, should we play together more? Or is it like, good win, but...
I think after something like that, normally people have their partners set up for a little while. I really don't like the idea of dropping people. Like I personally think if you make a commitment to play somebody with somebody, like honor that and do your thing if I wanted to play with Christian for the rest of the year, like I'm going to honor my commitments to play with Travis, with DJ, with all those people, and then I'll schedule more with Christian later, right? There's always another tournament. So I don't like, no matter how well you play with somebody, I don't like the idea of dropping partners.
Yeah.
It's also part of the reason why I don't go and commit 18 months with somebody, mm-hmm. right? Like I'm also not a huge fan of that. So yeah, we want to play some more tournaments together in due time. So I think we're probably looking at May, June onwards. But also, you know, he played really well with Thomas a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
If Riley isn't playing if Riley isn't playing PPAs, then, you know, Christian could play with either Thomas or I.
Right.
Right.
Were you guys playing straight up?
Yeah, for the most part. Occasionally we would stack if we just lost a few points in a row, just to give a different look. If we got stagnant one way or another, we would switch it up, but we really pretty much played straight up.
Yeah, I bet part of it was like they just didn't have a game plan for you guys, right?
Yeah, I mean, our game plan was use the reptile brain and cause chaos.
Yeah.
And we stuck to it.
Right. Okay, you had 4 match points. Was there a little voice in the back of your head like, God damn it, we're going to let this slip and they're going to come back? And that's all I would be thinking.
Yeah, for sure. Like, there is no team better at, like, escaping death than that team,
yeah,
right? How many times have they been in these close matches where they've saved championship points, match points, that type of stuff? So yeah, 100%. But we were still swinging away and playing confidently and we made it happen. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it would be impossible to not be like, oh man, are they going to come back? Like,
right.
Cause they just have such a great track record of doing it.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're playing really well right now? This is not good for our pros versus 5-0s this week, by the way.
We'll have to handicap us a little bit more. Yeah, so Thomas is coming on the pros versus 5-0s YouTube videos that I've been doing.
Who's the other pro?
The other pro for that one that you're playing in? Let me look.
And then who's my partner? I should text him and we should go play like tomorrow. So you get...
I don't remember off the top of my head. I think we're doing a couple with Julian, a couple with Deckel.
I do not want to play against Deckel. I can handle Julian. I don't want to play against Deckel.
I don't remember which ones you're part of. I know what time it is. I don't remember it off the top of my head. But yeah, you should get some practice in.
Yeah. Well, I played this past weekend. Didn't go well for me.
What, did you play in the tournament?
No, I lost to the Klitches.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, take us through that. I heard you were in rough shape.
So let's see. On the way there, I text hours before I text everybody and I go, I just want it on record. I have a tummy ache. Okay. My tummy ache got progressively worse on my way there.
Hot guys have IBS.
There's all excuses right now. On my way there, all of a sudden my neck starts to tighten up and I'm like, am I going to have to like drop out of this match? I did a little bit of yoga, warmed up and started to feel okay. Then my calf starts like cramping first game and I'm like, all right, add it to the record, also a calf strain
first game.
Yeah, by the end of it I'm like double calf strain, I'm extremely dehydrated and I'm like very susceptible to dehydration. So I realized all of this was just because I'm dehydrated. I get really bad stomach aches if I'm dehydrated, but I played through. I feel like we still should have won it, me and Ben from Real Clear Stats, but there was maybe like 2 points in all five games where we actually like dinked more than twice.
I can't imagine Tim is a big dinker.
No.
Tim bangs everything. I can't imagine you're a big dinker either.
Not against those two. not if Maddie's like right, like straight on. I'm speeding up every time.
100%, as you should, right at the glasses. Yeah. Well, dude, don't you, I think it's on your Instagram story, you run like 10 miles a day, don't you?
Yeah, I run a lot. Which doesn't help, and that leads to the dehydrate. If I don't think about it, if I'm not regimented, I'll get dehydrated. My muscles start to cramp up. Like, so I set myself up for failure.
Did you go for a run on Wednesday morning?
The day before I did run, yeah. But nothing crazy. I think it was like 4 or 6 miles. So I will not be doing that on Wednesday before our Thursday match.
Yeah, please don't. We need you at your best.
I'm excited, though. I do really well when I'm, like, playing up with nothing to lose. When I'm playing down and it's like, please don't lose this. And it's, like, on a stream and, like, there's a bunch of people, like, getting loud on the side. So I fall apart.
Do you want to know what challenge you're going to be in?
Yes.
All right. This has got to be, since this is not going out until later, we can tell you. But you can't tell your partner, okay?
Okay.
So, why? Because it's supposed to be a surprise for these YouTube videos.
Okay.
Because it would theoretically give you some time to practice.
Game plan, yeah.
And I don't know if I even want to tell you or not. All right, I'll tell you. So you and Pete. Do you know Pete?
No. What's his last name?
I don't know. I have him in my phone as Austin Pete. He's a cool dude.
Is he a true 5-0?
Yeah, he's good. Like, he's probably like... would do okay in pro qualifiers, so like probably better than a 5-0. He's probably five, if I had to put him on a duper, he's probably 5'7", 5'8".
Okay, good. All right,
The first one you're playing against Deckel and I,
dude,
where you guys don't have a kitchen, so you can go all the way up to the net if you want.
Oh really? Okay.
Second one you're playing against Deckel and I, where you can serve overhand, you can serve however you want.
Okay.
No rules on the serve.
Right.
And yeah, those are the two challenges you're going to
be
in.
So we won't play any just like normal games with a handicap?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Those are the handicaps.
All right. Interesting. I don't know if my pride will allow me to go into the kitchen. I want to beat you guys. I want to actually beat you guys.
Well, that's not going to happen. So if you want to do it, if you want to beat us, you're going to have to go into the kitchen.
Yeah.
You're going to have to use that to your advantage.
Dude, Deckel, something about Deckel's game, it's just, it throws me off.
That happens to a lot of people with Deckel. Yeah.
He's so big. He gets everything. His hands are so fast. He hits the ball so hard. His serves are absurd. That's going to be probably my biggest issue. That's what I want the handicap to be. Deckel just has to get the serve in. He can't like hit it with power.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Maybe we'll make Deckel serve underhand. Oh, wait. So, yeah. Don't run before that. We need you at full strength.
I think. No, I'm going to like take this, like my prep, going to be taken seriously.
You're going to be hitting overhand serves all week.
I don't know if that's even going to be that much of an advantage.
How could that not be an advantage, serving overhand?
I guess I've never tried one. I don't know what that would be like.
You have to dial it in. It's going to make your third shot easier every single time.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to do like a full overhead, but I think just be way above the waist with like.
You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
We're just going to, me and Deckel are going to play normal and you guys can figure it out.
Best two or three?
We're going to do one game rally scoring to 25.
Dude, rally scoring. I can't stand rally scoring. Don't tell Steve Kuhn I said that.
we can have Tim back on here to debate it again.
So both are rally scoring?
Yeah.
I guess that gives us more of a chance.
It should, yeah. Yeah. And also I got to keep these to a reasonable amount of time for YouTube. I can't be having like 45-minute matches, hour
right.
matches.
Right.
Nobody's going to stick around for all that.
And then there's going to be another match before that.
So right. Those are the two different matches.
Okay.
The next day we've got some different ones too.
Got it. Okay. All right. I'm pumped for that.
Yeah. Good. These are fun.
Yeah.
These are a ton of fun to make. Anyway, we detoured from the Austin.
Okay. Well, I want to ask about one thing. So game two, it's 8-5. Colin hits kind of like you hit toward Colin's hip. He kind of scoops it, and it does kind of look a little odd, but you wanted it to be called for a carry. So what happened there? Did you look back to watch that again?
No, I didn't. But basically, my thought process was I was just trying to kind of learn about this carry rule and how they're actually going to enforce it. I kind of doubted that they were going to change anything. The referee said that they didn't see a double hit, which I think it was clearly a double hit. Like, the ball did change directions. I don't think anybody could argue that. It was going one direction and then one another. Now, was it hit a third time and that's a carry? Probably not, but I don't really understand this rule, and I have reached out to a couple of referees. I did talk to a couple of people on site. A carry...
Afterward, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. A carry is when you basically sort of have that slingshot effect on a shot.
That's what it looked like to me, not a double hit.
It's what I thought it was possibly.
Yeah.
And that should be, if it's a carry, it should be a fault, essentially. Hmm. I don't think it's an enforceable rule to see in real time. But really, I kind of wanted to just have that like conversation and actually have an example where we can talk about it with the referee. And also, like, I think they had a little bit of momentum at that time. It served as a timeout too.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the right call was there. They said that it wasn't a carry. That could be correct. But also I just kind of wanted clarification on this rule, because it's very, very ambiguous and difficult to enforce.
Yeah.
I think what I've heard is this is mostly to, prevent the egregious ones. You remember when that one highlight where Pesa and Ryan Sherry were playing, and Pesa goes down and like tracks down a lob and like scoops it from behind him and flings it back?
Yeah.
I think that's what this carry rule is supposed to be sort of preventing.
Yeah.
I don't think it's possible to call a carry in one of those quick hands exchanges.
Right.
Yeah. I think that there are probably examples of where a carry occurs, like possibly the one where we were in that match with Colin, but I don't think it's possible to really call that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, basically just doubled as a timeout too.
Got it. Okay. All right. So let's try and like apply this to an amateur situation where you're playing against two guys who play together a lot, have a lot of chemistry. Based on Duper, they're better than you. They should win. They're favored. What is like a good strategy going into a match like that to just try and wreak havoc, make something happen, try and pull off that upset?
Are you asking for your pros versus 5-0s debut? Like,
yeah, yeah.
So I would say, like, when you're in a new partnership, the partnership's only going to work long-term if you both play to your own strengths, right? And if you both play to your own strengths and you both play well and it doesn't work, you got to split. But you should never be in a partnership where your strengths don't mesh well with your partner. So when you're first playing with somebody, play your game completely, and you almost don't really want to worry as much about what your partner is going to do as a result of it. Like, let's say you have a really good speed up cross court and you're generating pop-ups and it's a strength of yours, but your partner isn't ready for it and they're not used to that maybe. Well, you don't want to be in a situation where you have to move away from your strengths in order to accommodate your partner. So the first time you play together, play to your strengths completely. Play the shots that you know that you can make, the shots that normally work for you. And I think over time you can start to understand each other's patterns a little bit. And if your strengths don't work well with your partner, I think you got to get a new partner, basically. That answer your question?
No.
Okay, perfect. You want to restate the question then?
Yeah, if you're playing a team that's supposed to beat you and you know you need to change it up, like, how do you approach that game? I mean, for you guys, it was you're playing aggressive, you're playing loose, pulling the trigger, and not letting the mismatch get in your head.
Mm-hmm. I think generally an underdog team plays more aggressively,
mm-hmm.
right? I think there's more randomness when the ball is sped up. It's the points are pretty structured when you're hitting those soft dinks. Once the ball gets sped up a little bit more, there's a lot more randomness that takes over.
Yeah.
And you want that. You sort of want to break down the points and be a little bit more chaotic when you are the team that is the underdog.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, like, look, Christian and I know we're not going to, like, outgrind Ben Collin and right. dinking rallies. Like, we absolutely know that. Nobody's going to outgrind Ben and Collin and dinking rallies. So we wanted to take our opportunities when we got them. And it's a fine line between being more aggressive than you might normally be and being reckless mm-hmm. as well. So timed aggression, really going after your shots and playing to each other's strengths.
Yeah. Prevent them from setting up a structure, getting into their patterns. You mm-hmm. want to promote chaos to the degree that you can. Controlled chaos.
Yeah.
When you are thinking about Colin versus Ben and who you're playing the ball to, I mean, it didn't seem like you were targeting Colin like crazy. You were playing to Ben. But is that something you guys were actively talking about?
Yeah. I mean, part of the thing that we when we had the diagram is I think that the way to beat Ben and Colin is to play them as if they're equals, essentially. Like, Ben's a stronger player, but Colin in his spot, in his right side, is really, really good when he's in his spot, of course. So moving the ball around and playing them basically 50-50 and making sure that Ben does have to stay on his side is super, super important. And I think that that's something that not everybody does a ton of. If you give Ben, the beauty of pickleball is no matter who you give a good dink to, if you're a 2.0 and you hit a great dink to me, I can't really do anything with it.
Right.
If you're a 2.0 and you hit a great dink to Ben's backhand, he really can't do anything with it. That's kind of the beautiful part of pickleball. If you hit a quality enough shot, no matter who's across the net, they can't really hurt you. So keeping Ben honest with some of those shots is important. And we really just tried to continue to spread the ball around. That way you sort of find some openings.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you guys come up against Wright and Andre. What happened there?
That was just rough.
Yeah.
Well, we played Pablo and Fed in the semis, and we had a really, really good match with them. We fought off a match point and we won 11-8 in the third earlier that day. And then we just kind of shit the bed against against Matt and Andre. They played really well. They really didn't give us too many errors. We had our opportunities in game two, but we really just didn't execute. We lost a bunch of the hands battles. We made a lot of unforced errors, and they played really, really clean. Mm-hmm. So they deserved it.
Yeah. Andre seems to be playing very well right now. How would you stack him up? Like, okay, if you're going to rank top five men's doubles players, is he in there?
I think so. I think your top five has got to be Ben, J-Dub, Dylan, Andre, and, you know, I think that Riley, but I would probably put those as a top five.
You don't put Christian in there?
I think Christian at his best is... I think Christian at his best is arguably top three.
Yeah, when he's on.
When he's on.
Yeah.
But he has much more his best is, yeah, I think him at his best, he might have the highest ceiling of almost anybody but Ben.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not as consistent as those other guys. Those guys bring it day in and day out, like Christian is still new. Like, you see the flashes of him being incredible. Like, how many times have I said on this podcast, like, Christian Alshon's really good?
Yeah, right.
He just doesn't, it's not the same level of consistency. So I wouldn't put him top five yet.
Yeah, right.
Yet. I would bet a decent chunk of money that he's going to be a top five player.
Streaky. He's got a really high ceiling. He just needs to raise that baseline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. So I'd say if I'm going to power rank players right now, I would go Ben. J-Dub's a little bit streaky as well, and so is Dylan. J-Dub, Dylan, Andre, and Riley are all very, very close.
So Andre, J-Dub, Dylan, Riley, all not PPA players at this point,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting.
Yeah.
How this?
Well, actually, Andre is signed with Nuco, but I think he can still play APP events.
Yeah.
Yeah. J-Dub and Dylan are not. Riley is with MLP, and right. with his original MLP deal.
Yeah.
What a cluster.
Yeah.
What a cluster. So yeah, I think it is interesting to see. We have talked about the leveling of the playing field with this ball as well, and this is second tournament in a row that Ben and Colin haven't taken it home, but first tournament in forever where Ben and Anna Lee haven't won.
Yeah, at the hands of Andre.
Andre the Giant.
And AB.
Mm-hmm.
And AB also just won, took down Anna Lee and Catherine with Rohrbacher.
I got a text from Matty P. It was, the score was, They nearly choked the fourth game. It got tense. They were so tight. It took at least five match points.
Oh, you think we're bad luck for Anna Lee? Colin just came on. He's losing. Anna Lee just came on. She's losing.
And to be fair, as soon as I came on this podcast, I wasn't winning a whole lot either. Yeah. So maybe.
We're changing that.
Yeah. The curse of the pickle pod. I kind of like that.
I like that too.
Yeah. Who else have we had on recently?
Let's see how Fed does. Zhao Mei.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, we had Riley on. He's not even in the tournament, so.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think...
that's wild.
I think it's... I'd be very curious to actually go and see some of these matches, because Catherine and Anna Lee had never lost together.
Yeah.
They won... I think they had an undefeated... Or Anna Lee had an undefeated women's season last year. Mm-hmm. This is her first women's doubles loss in forever. Man, Rachel and Anna are playing unbelievably together.
Yeah. Rachel. Where'd you rank her?
Let's see.
I mean, that squeeze team, so Maddie said this in retrospect, as like a high upside, like dynasty, essentially. No way you could draft that team again.
Yeah, you got Andre, who's top five. You've got Anna, who is in consideration for the number two spot. You've got Rachel, who's probably a top five right now, with also sort of that Christian ceiling where she can be a number two. She can be the second best player.
Yeah.
If things go her way.
Mm-hmm.
And then me. Yeah, rounding out the bottom.
Silver medalist, dude.
Silver medalist. And that was wild. Yeah, all four medalist. Squeeze players playing in gold medals.
Yeah.
Andre in two, Anna in two, Rachel in one, me in one.
Yep.
Wild.
Yeah. Andre tweeted, some people want it to happen. Some wish it could happen. Others make it happen. Michael Jordan.
Andre tweeted that?
Yeah, he just tweeted it. He's going ham on social right now.
As he should. It's his day. Today, Monday, March 18th, we're going to call that Andre Day Escu Day here in Austin.
Okay, I like it. We got to remember, we'll write it down so we celebrate it every year.
No, we're immediately going to forget that, 100%.
Quick little side note, we are still hiring for a social media manager. We want somebody who lives and breathes pickleball, who hopefully listens to the Pickle Pod. So that sounds like you, running all our socials, creating content every single day. Hit us up. We are closing in on some candidates, though, so send us that resume.
What does the ideal candidate look like for that, other than listens to the Pickle Pod? Like, what type of experience?
In terms of experience, like, the number one priority is, like, you really do live and breathe pickleball. Like, you're a total junkie.
You got to be dank with the memes?
That is, like, icing on the cake. But the meme game, it's tough. Not everybody can meme. But if you can, like, churn out graphics, which I don't think is that tough, do short form content, and you can speak the language of pickleball, like, that's the ideal candidate.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I can teach anybody to, you know, do short form content or create graphics and stuff. So we want to find a pickleball junkie. That is the goal. Okay, I want to do these Maddie Pickles topics.
We got
some of them we already talked about. Let's see, first one. And we can skip any we don't really want to react to. But three of the four MLP events overlap APP. Will be interesting to see how that plays out. About half the MLP events, front run / trail PPA events, presumably saving costs.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think that was intentional?
To stagger them like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely.
Save
a lot of money that way.
No, I mean, like, putting overlapping them over APP? APP events.
Maybe. It was, I mean, all I'm saying is if you're going to schedule anything in pickleball, the first thing you do is you check the APP, the PPA, and the MLP schedules to make sure you're not conflicting, right? So they definitely had that in mind. They knew that those dates were overlapping with APP.
Yeah. I mean, I think it kind of makes, if you're competitors with APP, it kind of makes sense, right? Like somebody like Andre, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody like Andre, they have to be at an MLP. They have this thing in their contract where they can go play an APP event. Well, just because you can, if it's on the same weekend, they get out of that.
Right.
So, I mean, it kind of, I'm sure some of those players aren't going to be super stoked about that, but, you know, I guess it makes sense if you're a competitor of that league.
Yeah.
And somebody like Andre is, what's the term? Beholden to you first.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. MLP released their schedule, but I still don't really know how it works. So there's more than four MLP events, aren't there?
Yeah, I think there's six, and then there's like two kind of like championship or playoff type events. So eight total.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay, so Ben, obviously been at the top for a long time. Do you feel like he is coming back down to earth, or people are starting to rise to his level and his dominance is fading?
Yes, but I don't think that's anything on Ben necessarily. Like, as sports evolve, it gets more and more difficult to be head and shoulders above anybody else. I mean, he had 2 years ago, he had so many triple crowns. Last year, he had a ton of triple crowns. This year, I don't know if he has any so far this year. As a sport matures, it gets, the playing field gets more and more even, and you just don't necessarily see that consistent dominance as much.
And even if, like, the disparity between him and the next guy is still the same, there's a higher volume of high-level players. Mm-hmm. So he has to win more quality matches in order to accomplish the same result.
Right. We talked about this before in singles, right? It used to be when you played singles, your first 2-3 rounds were just an absolute joke.
Right.
So, like, if my duper in singles was a 7, I'm probably playing a 5 in the first round, a 5.5 in the second round,
right,
where I have basically 100% chance of winning. Now, if he has to play 5 rounds, even if he has a 90% chance of winning each match, compounding that is, what, 5 times?
You don't have to do that.
No, I do. I do.
I appreciate it. This is good.
Oh, wait. 90, hold on.
Are you just 0.9 times 5.
0.9 times 0.9 times 0.9 times 0.9.
This is the stuff we had to do it, like, in our heads for the GMAT.
So this is, he's got a 60% chance of winning, even if he has a 90% chance of winning every match. Just so it gets more and more difficult as the fields get deeper to string together a bunch of these matches in a row.
Yep.
And that's the biggest thing, I think.
Yeah.
So I think that's a bad, I think a lot of people are calling into question, like, oh, is Ben, you know, is his reign at the top over? Like,
it's not no, over, no,
absolutely not. People seem to speculate on that whenever he loses. People are probably going to speculate that on Anna Lee. Like, is she done as the GOAT? Absolutely not. No.
Yeah.
But, and it's natural to sort of speculate on that, but no, he's still the GOAT. He's still the undisputed best player in all three events as a male.
Hot seat, James Ignatowicz.
What? Oh, he's on the hot seat?
He's on the hot
seat. Is he going to get dropped?
Yeah. I mean, so Andre subs in for James with Matt and with Anna and takes 2 golds. James on the hot seat, confirmed. Sorry, James. Come on the pod. We can talk it out. And then Maddie's wondering, okay, is Andre the second best male player right now, or is that too reactionary? We kind of touched on it a little bit. But
wait, if you're Anna, who are you playing with?
I'm playing with Andre. I'm playing with who I win with.
You're just cutthroat.
Yes.
I just think that, like, the playing with a significant other has got to be so much more difficult than even just going out and playing pickleball. I could never.
Also, the dynamic of, like, yeah, you got to play with that person.
That would be rough. I bet you they do it for a while, but I think eventually they're going to get different partners. So,
yeah, well,
either
we'll
different.
See.
Yeah. Is Andre the second best male player right now? That's it would be really, really hard to do. You do the power rankings
for what?
top five male players.
Ben, Riley, Andre. Then I would go J-Dub. I don't know. To me, watching the sport right now, it's very difficult to make that assessment, given the variety of results and the way a player like a Christian will play really well one weekend and then kind of be a no-show the next, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Yeah,
Deckel.
You're probably looking at, yeah, I mean, like, you're in the Dylan, Matt, Deckel, Christian, yeah. Thomas. It gets a lot tougher after those top 4, I think.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I would be like, if I were to just say all the players that could be number five, yeah, it's Matt, Dylan, Christian. I even throw like Deckel in there.
I'm probably forgetting some people too.
I wouldn't put I wouldn't put Thomas in there. I wouldn't put Julian in there.
Thomas's ceiling is super high though. Thomas can be there. And also like Thomas has really good mixed results too. Like him and Vivian are pretty consistent podium people now.
Yeah.
Okay,
we talked about this one, which is basically like, would you essentially drop a partner if you have success with somebody? Let's see, APP and PPA talent gap, is it overstated? Especially now that the Johnson 5 are consistently playing APPs. J-Dub and Dylan are in upcoming draws, Georgia winning medals, Tyra returning to APP.
I didn't know Tyra was returning to APP too.
News to me.
Also, I think you have Judit in this conversation now too. I think she's playing the women's. Ooh. Judit?
Oh, yeah.
I think
you say Judit?
I think it's Judit.
I don't know.
We say Jaume, so.
Yeah.
I think she's in that conversation as well. And I think she was in the, she's in the women's singles final today. So is it overstated? Again, hard to say, but I just think that the floor is rapidly rising on all of these, for all of these players, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're at, whereas about, you know, a year ago, it was a pretty large gap. But if the top players are going from a duper of 7.7 to 7.1 over 6 months, you know, APP players might have gone from a 6 to a 6.5 over that same period of time. So I think that there's just, it's easier to get closer to the top now.
Yeah. Okay.
So next up, Matty Pickles, he's firing. Goes, still no Riley, and another gold for Matt Wright. React.
You react.
No, I asked you first.
Do you think Riley's sitting there like, God damn it, this is pissing me off, or does he not care?
No, he's got to be kind of pissed off. Knowing Riley, like how competitive he is, he's probably pissed.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got to be pissed. What do you think?
I think I was surprised to see how much Matt Wright was pumped to win that gold.
Yeah, he played well.
Yeah. 46.
Mm-hmm. And he looks every bit of it. yeah, he played unbelievable. But it's, you know, when you have a weird breakup like that, yeah, it is kind of natural. No matter what they say, like, oh, yeah, we're good, whatever. Like, you definitely want to outperform the person that you are no longer playing with.
Going to off topic here. So, Andre, playing with that Proton. What do you think of that Proton?
It must be good enough.
Yeah. I was on a call with the guy who started that. He was at Honeywell. He was at Lockheed Martin. He's an engineer. Like, he's a brilliant, brilliant dude. They make a softball bat that is apparently like, it's revolutionized the way they make softball bats. And he was telling me that the way they make these Proton paddles is they look at every single limit and they push as closely up against it as they possibly can. Right before I got on a call with this guy, I was on a call with another guy who is a paddle manufacturer. And unwarranted, he was like complaining about the Proton and how he thinks it's like unfair. It's, you know, it needs to be regulated. And then I get on the phone with the Proton guy and he's like, no, we know exactly where the regulations are and we are pushing up as tightly as possible as we can.
Why wouldn't you? Yeah. I I don't understand this. Like, if you've got a rule, if it's 40 grit or whatever, yeah, make your thing 40 grit.
Yeah.
So the Proton paddles, I do think the thing that's most interesting about them is the surface almost feels rubbery a little bit. And so it does have pretty good grab to it. It's got good pop, obviously. Like, you know, I think the cotton candy look could use.
Yeah, the colors are tough.
Yeah, yeah, that could use some improvement there. But it is a pretty unique surface from anything else that
I was explaining, and I won't talk about it because I'll just trip all over myself trying to explain what he explained to me. Maybe we'll get him on the pod and he can talk about it, but he's got this whole approach, proprietary technology, and he's doing it differently, and he thinks he's figured out like how to do the surface the right way, and he thinks it's going to be like the next thing all the other paddle brands try and copy.
Yeah, I mean, until they move the goalposts.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
well, both of them were saying that that is really, that's the biggest issue, is they should stop moving the goalposts. Here are the goalposts. Here's regulations. Now, all of you paddle brands, you innovate within that. And once we do know, okay, this is how it's going to be in perpetuity, we'll start to see way more innovation within that. But because they keep moving the goalposts, we're sort of in this like weird phase where paddle brands don't know exactly what to do and how much they can invest in different types of technology, because that technology could be illegal tomorrow if they keep moving the goalposts.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tough because there are so many things that are new that you might not want to have as a part of your game, right? Like, let's say we were still all playing with wooden paddles and people are innovating and somebody has the genius idea to use a composite material and everybody's mind is blown. Do you move the goalposts to move it back to wood, or do you allow it to happen? I think there's still too much innovation to have to say that this is the final rules for paddles. So they're moving the goalposts it's happening frequently. Like, it's changing constantly because people are adapting. I think at a certain point, the paddle industry probably needs to self-regulate rather than having an external USA Pickleball doing it, right? Like softball bats. They have different regulations on what can or can't be used, how fast the ball can come off of the bat, that type of stuff. But it's not regulated by like the American Softball Association. It's regulated by a group of paddle manufacturers who've gotten together to sort of decide like what these rules are going to be. And they need to have input from whoever is using these bats at the different levels. So I think eventually what's probably going to happen is the paddle manufacturers are going to work with the different entities to set up a standard for each. USA Pickleball will probably work with the paddle manufacturers to say, this is how we want the game to look for amateurs. Create us a set of standards to regulate paddles for USA Pickleball approved. MLP will say, this is what we want our product to look like. Create a set of standards to ensure that this is how the game is played at Major League Pickleball. Mm-hmm. And I think that the paddle manufacturers are probably the best place to do this.
Yeah.
Sort of self-regulate.
A lot of brilliant guys making these paddles.
Yeah, and it's only getting faster, right? There's the pace of innovation is only getting quicker right now, mm-hmm. It seems like.
Yeah. I talked to another group that's manufacturing paddles last week. I talked to them for like an hour and a half just because it was like fascinating stuff. I'm like, so could you just make a crazy souped up paddle, max pop, max grit? I don't care about whether it's illegal or not. Like, can you do that? Could you just make a paddle on steroids? And they're like, yeah. I was like, can you actually make it and send me one? They're like, yeah.
Yeah, it's called the Vice. So it's called the Diadem Vice.
I've never played with that one, but these guys are manufacturing me specifically one paddle that's going to be just maxed in all categories, just a rocket ship.
Nice.
I'm really excited to get that. I wish I could have gotten it for our challenge, but
no, the challenge was serving overhand. We will do a challenge of illegal paddles at some point, so I'll invite you back for that one, depending on how you perform in this one.
Do you think people would buy that? Like, if we go, all right,
this is 100%.
I'm going to put it on the site.
I think the Vice is a pretty good selling paddle.
Yeah,
I see a decent amount of Vice.
You think paddles. That's BS though, to show it to a rec court with just a souped up paddle that's clearly legal? That pissed me off. But I'd also, but total double standard. I would definitely use one.
Hey, I like it. At least acknowledge if you're being hypocritical.
I would have to say it to be like, by the way, yes, this paddle is like absurd.
I think that's probably, if it depends, it honestly, I think it depends the way that you use it. If you're like a 75-year-old lady who is using this souped up paddle just to stay competitive with your group and it helps you be competitive, probably not, or that's probably okay. But if you are playing with your same group that you're pretty even with and all of a sudden you're just head and shoulders better because you switched paddles, I'd say that's probably bogus. Yeah, so no great answer to that.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm excited to get my steroid paddle. We'll talk about it on the pod.
I'm excited to see it.
Yeah,
I'm excited to see if it can
maybe do a little
make
video.
You any better. Hopefully, not. maybe it'll help beat Maddie Pickles and Tim in the next go around.
Yeah, hopefully there's a rematch. I can redeem myself. Although Maddie did edit the video to just make me look so good, I had so
really
terrible errors, and for whatever reason,
we need that footage, Maddie. Yeah. We need that footage. I want to see the low lights. You got the highlights. I want to see the low lights now.
I put the same thing, like when I was playing at Pickle Ranch and launched that forehand off the parking garage, there's a lot of those.
Nice.
Okay, question for you. Did you notice anything different about the Vulcan balls over the weekend?
They do seem like they're getting better. They seem like they were getting better in Minnesota as well. But in Minnesota, the surface was so... So, I'll back up. The more... The conditions are making for high bounces, which is typically in cold temperature. When the ball is harder, the deficiencies in the ball are more obvious, right? There's more bad bounces.
Mm-hmm.
So in Minnesota, where when the ball was hard, however, the floor was really spongy, so it didn't seem like there were a ton of bad bounces. I don't know if they were using the new formula or not. I would say it did seem to improve in Austin, but also it was slightly softer conditions. The ball was a little bit softer. So it seemed like the ball played better. There are too many variables to say whether that's a result of a new formula of the ball or just the conditions being more conducive to the ball playing better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I just know that they're working on a new variation of the ball and they're constantly tweaking it. So it'll be interesting to see how that changes. My question is like, okay, so they're selling all these balls that are then going to be like obsolete come 2 months from now. Like,
yeah, but if there was any real difference in the formula, the way that the ball played was not super noticeable. So I don't think your old balls that you bought a couple of weeks ago, I don't think they're obsolete unless they're out of round, which is the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, the out of round is like crazy. Because when we were playing in the Clutch's backyard, before we would start like a new game, literally roll the balls on the ground, and then whichever one is not bouncing crazy as it's rolling, we'd be like, all right, let's use that one.
Yep. Yep, so it's not a bad way of doing it.
Very, very apparent. Okay, I compiled some comments and questions from different listeners. We'll run through those. And then we've got founder of Pickleball World Series coming on. So, okay, this was one from... I think the Jaume episode or maybe the Riley. It would be nice to know how you guys get paid. Is it just winnings at each tournament or is it all players sign a play contract per year or multi-years, number of tournaments and get paid that way in addition to prize money? I don't care about the amount. I just want to know how it works.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a super complicated question because there's probably 10 different payment structures right now. I would say... The majority of, so we'll talk about APP. APP is prize money only currently. There's no more appearance fees. there are different types of sort of agreements with APP, where if you play a certain amount, they basically double your prize money or triple your prize money. So APP is prize money only and no appearance fees. There are a bunch of different ways where the PPA and MLP have structured their contracts. Historically, it's been a combination of appearance fees and prize money. And it still is a combination of those two. But now we are essentially salaried and contracted for a certain amount of events in everybody's contract. Each time you play an event, you get a portion of your salary. So if I'm contracted for 20 events, I play an event and I get 1/20th of my sort of salary. And then anything, any sort of prize money which I have won in that tournament. The prize money is now substantially less than it previously was. So it used to be, let's say, your appearance fees were 50% of the tournament's overall payout. Now the appearance fees are probably 90%+ of the overall payout of a tournament. There are a lot of nuances and caveats to this based on different contracts signed at different times, but I would say that's probably the simplest summary that I can do.
Yeah, it's just it's case by case.
Yeah, but I think that's probably the best generalization that we could give right now.
In 3 years, pickleball will be the next bowling or cornhole.
Wrong.
Wrong.
You're fired, whoever asked that question. That's not even a question. That's just a statement and a wrong statement. So,
okay. I wish I wrote down his username so we could say address directly to him, but I don't remember. Okay. So, Jaume, Colin, and Ben have all mentioned patterns before. I wish people would talk more about what those patterns are and how they work. So, maybe there's some like standard patterns you can recognize in a typical match that you're able to exploit, or patterns that you want to try and get into and establish.
Yeah, but I mean, you can think of patterns at the simplest level as if you dink the ball and the ball is down low, you know that they need to hit the ball upwards. There's I think that we use patterns at a more intricate way, and we're generally talking about attacking patterns. Like if I speed up to somebody's backhand, I know that they're going to go to the middle or something like that, right? But pattern recognition has a bunch of different levels. Something as simple as when I've hit them a dink and it's an inch off of the ground, I know that they can't attack it consistently. That's a pattern. Ball is there, they can't attack. I recognize that. And it gets more and more difficult and intricate as you get up in skill level. So I think that's a very case-by-case sort of question as well. What patterns that work against Colin aren't going to work against, you know, Altoff.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think Prawn is going to jump on here, but maybe we can do one more. So we talked about Riley losing sponsorship. I don't think we did talk about that. That's not correct.
We talked about whether his sponsors would be pissed off that he's not playing PPA.
Right. And if it's worth it to like eat those travel fees and entry fees to play in what some regard as the premier tour, because ultimately that comes back in the form of increased sponsorship value. Right. Because mm-hmm. we were talking about how it's just not worth it for Riley to play in PPAs.
Well, I'm sure Riley is in close conversations with any of his sponsors. I can't imagine he just went rogue on this.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot more conversation. Yeah. I hear you.
It's pretty tough to say from the outside looking in.
Yeah. So. Okay.
The pickle box.
The pickleball box?
The pickleball box.
Yeah, just kidding. It's the pickleball box.
The pickleball box.
It is a subscription box.
Gear, accessories, apparel.
And it comes straight to my door with all the hottest pickleball gear in here.
It's so hot, I can barely...
Over $250 of value in each box, and you only pay $99 for each one. Go to thedink.shop, undoubtedly, the best gift for any pickleballer, or if you're like me, or anybody who listens to this, you're obsessed with pickleball, this is honestly like the perfect thing for you.
All right, we're joined here by Pranav Kohli, the founder of Pickleball World Series. Most people in pickleball know him as the CEO of Pickleball United, but this new venture is set to launch here in January 2025. So, Pran, tell us a little bit about what the Pickleball World Series is.
Yeah, so Pickleball World Series is basically taking what was happening in pickleball in the U.S. and taking it on a global stage. We start off with six events in five different continents, starting off in the U.S. It's a combination of a league as well as an individual championship. Culminating, at a global level, basically starting off in the U.S. in January 2025 with either New York or Las Vegas, then moving to London, and then going from there to Saudi Arabia, and then going to India, and then to either China or Japan or Hong Kong, and then finally culminating in Australia, and then we do it all over again the year after.
Got it. Okay,
that sounds sweet.
Yeah. It's what's give us like the grand vision in 10 years from now. What do we want Pickleball World Series to be?
Yeah, I mean, so Pickleball World Series, from our perspective, is the equivalent of what Grand Slams are for tennis. And that's the vision in the long term. It is what we expect all the pros to be playing from a tour perspective and what people will aspire to play in on a global level. And that's what becomes sort of your go-to event. And then with Pickleball World Series, what we're also building is what we're calling the Pickleball World Rankings, which essentially are the qualifying events for the Pickleball World Series. And the combination of two is what you will need to play essentially across the globe in order to play in the Pickleball World Series. And that's how we see it in 10 years' time, the ultimate championships across the globe.
Right.
So who do you, I'm sure you know about the complexities of the landscape right now. Like, who do you envision playing in this in 2025?
Yeah, I mean, so in 2025, we're going to start off with an invitation only. And we're saying basically a draw of 32 in individual events, 16 players from the U.S., both men and women, and 16 players from the rest of the world. So it actually, showcases the talent which is available across the globe. And we'll see how that talent fares with some of the talent from the U.S. Obviously, the complexities, as you mentioned, Zane, is that some people may not be playing the event in 2025. But over the past weeks, we know that certain people will be available to play. And I think those are the ones who are going to play in 2025. And then eventually, we hope, we're able to carve out certain partnerships to have a lot of different people playing in different, eventually it becomes sort of complementary as opposed to competitive with what is happening within the landscape.
Yeah. So I'd imagine currently that would be competitive, right? You're the new person on the block. I would imagine that this has got to be some sort of, there's got to be some sort of probably understanding with APP. And I'd have to imagine there's also not going to be a ton of cooperation currently with the MLP PPA. That's, if I'm just speculating from the outside looking in, that's what I would imagine right now. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and again, I mean, I reiterate that it depends on how you would envision it. And I think if you keep looking at it as competitive, then it becomes competitive. But if you look at it as complementary, almost sort of a feeding system to the World Series, then it can become complementary as well. I mean, having said that, we're speaking to the APP. I also spoke with Connor at Necker over the past one week. The sense I got was that he's open to having a conversation on what that could look like. But at this point, right now, what we're focused on is building a great product for everyone. So essentially, we're not too focused on what it means with our partnership with the MLP or PPA or APP. Right now, we're primarily focusing on how do we build a great product and then figure out what happens from there on.
Sure. Yeah. So you're focused on your own domain before you go out and make some of these partnerships, absolutely, which I think is certainly smart. Yeah. Well, super excited to see what that ends up looking like in 2025. Are there going to be any substantial changes to format or what's going to differentiate the Pickleball World Series other than the fact that it's being played around the world and the very nice prize money that you're offering?
Yeah, I think, just to talk about the prize money, it's depending on the location, it will be anywhere between $500,000 to $1 million. And then in addition to that, there'll be team event prize money as well. So, one of the things that we want to incorporate into Pickleball World Series is that we sort of want to change the narrative around pickleball. What we see right now is that, a lot of people speak about pickleball not being able to draw crowds in, pickleball not being a broadcasting sport. And while we may be a whiles away from getting pickleball as a broadcasting sport for major broadcasters to be interested to pay money to get the rights, but what we do want to change in 2025 from a narrative perspective is that we do want to draw the crowds in. And one of the things which we are doing is that we're combining entertainment with pickleball and, creating halftime shows, getting, entertainers involved, getting stars to perform and, getting the crowds in from that perspective. And initially, we're not, especially for the US event, we're not charging any entry fees for people to come in. So it's essentially allowing the community to come and experience pickleball at, different players from across the globe, you wouldn't have seen earlier or otherwise. And then them competing with some of the players from the US, maybe generating some rivalry. And then at the same time, having some form of entertainment, almost like a festival on the final day. So, the locations that we're going to play that is going to be iconic. We're looking at different, venues for that. And similarly, as we move abroad internationally, it's going to be the same for the players from the US to play in Saudi Arabia, to play in India, to play in China, to play in, London, to play in Australia. And then again, it's about encompassing the crowd and getting them in and making sure in 2025, we change the narrative around drawing people in. So we may never be able to, because of the size of the courts, we may not be able to fill 18, 20,000 seats, but I think a 6,000 seater stadium is something that we're aiming to fulfill and, showcase pickleball at. So I think that's one of those things that's going to be different.
Well, we did see that at the Hard Rock, right, with the yep. Pickleball Slam. We know that we can get 6,000 people into a venue to watch pickleball, so it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Well, and to watch pickleball players instead of tennis.
Instead of tennis players, yeah, let's do that.
Okay, going back to prize money, I think when we chatted before, you said something like per event, a member of the winning team could pocket $70,000.
If you win all three categories and the team event, you would probably make upward of $200,000.
So this is like pro pickleball compensation, given that landscape, like this could be a pretty big payday.
If you lose everything, you still make money. If you lose the first round and everything, you still make money. Okay. And you don't need to pay any.
Oh, go ahead. What money is that then? If you lose everything,
how do I sign up?
It's dependent on if you're a US player or if you're an international player. But if you're a US player, you make $3,000 per event, irrespective. So if you lose all three events in the first round, you make $9,000.
I can certainly do that.
You lose all three events in the first round, you would make $9,000. What are those three events?
If you're a US
just
player,
for clarity.
So men's singles, men's doubles, mixed doubles.
Got it. And that is not including the team event?
No. The team event is separate. So, and your accommodation is paid for, your flights are paid for, everything is paid for. So it's a 2-week event. I mean, it's a 1-week event, but you show up a week before for content and, because essentially what we want to do is from the entertainment perspective also and creating rivalries perspective as well, we want to create stars on a global level. What we want to do is some of these people, we want to showcase internationally. We want to showcase, in India, we want to showcase in China, we want to showcase in Saudi. And, we've got syndication partnerships in different countries to showcase pickleball. For example, Saudi adoption happening and all that stuff. So, essentially we're trying to create an ecosystem where players could come and play without worrying about contracts, and they could still play other events as well. So, you know, there's other prize money to be won. There's no exclusivity that you have to play only our event. The only thing is that, you know, if you're drafted in a team, then you'll have to play all six, basically.
Yeah, well, that's impressive. I think, that's an impressive amount. And, you know, I do obviously need to take any opportunity to toot my own horn and say, I didn't think that there were, I think that there were going to be more entrants into the professional pickleball landscape because it is still so new. And so it's interesting every time somebody does come in with a good plan to shake things up a little bit. And the international market is certainly a spot that you've identified of where things are growing and that you want to get eyeballs on.
I really want to drill down on this though. So if you're an American pro player and you just show up, everything is comped. Worst case scenario, you make $9,000.
$54,000 in a year, yes.
That sounds pretty good. Okay, and then, like, okay, so you lose all three events, but then you also compete in the team event. So that's more, that would be above and beyond the $9,000.
Yeah, but, you know, of course, the team event is, you know, only two teams. So we have six teams to start off with, and only two teams will make the prize money, basically.
Got it. Okay. Very interesting. And is this going to be pro and amateur?
No, pro only.
So just pro.
So,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to do a lot of events around the tournament for amateurs, but, you know, and those will be, you know, whether it's an amateur APP or amateur US pickleball or, you know, just open plays and, you know, those kind of things. But the Pickleball World Series is essentially going to be a pro only event. The six Grand Slams, essentially, or the six marquee events. But the events in Pickleball World Rankings, which are the sanctioned events underneath, they are open to both amateurs and pros. And that's eventually, the first year it's invitation only. From second year onwards, you have to play those events in order to qualify.
Got it.
And by the way, I mean, our objective is that this prize money needs to go year on year. So by third year, this needs to be higher than the first year. So that it becomes sustainable. So your long-term thought process, you know, in terms of this Pickleball World Series, it essentially is for the top pros across the globe, is what you play to have a sustainable career.
Got it. Okay. And so the two companies that are backing this are Pickleball Asia, which is your company, and then the Times Group.
Times Group.
Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And so how does the Times Group get involved? How are they viewing this from an investment standpoint? What do they see as far as the upside here?
Yeah, I mean, from their perspective, so first of all, Vineet Jain, who's the MD of Times Group, he plays pickleball. And I think that's how all conversation starts. You know, so the first time I met him was on his court in his house, you know, which he has. So I think that is always a good conversation starter. Hey, you play pickleball. Why don't we do something in pickleball? And I think from there on, their objective for pickleball, and even if you go to Times Now News right now, and if you click on sports, right after cricket, pickleball is the sport right next to it. So their objective is to sort of grow the sport, especially in India, but also internationally. They're also investors in the cricket league in the US. They've got that, basically inroads, and they also own a linear television channel in the US called Willow TV, which basically showcases all of cricket in the US. So, you know, they've got those interests also, involved. But at this point, their whole objective is that Vineet plays pickleball and, he wants to get involved.
Right. Okay. What in like its mature stage, how many events do you see per year?
So 2025 will have six marquee events, but 2025 will also sanction close to about 1,000 events globally. Mm-hmm. So what you'll see is Pickleball World Rankings being adopted by a lot of international federations. And we're working closely now with GPF and US Pickleball and other places, to make that announcement over the next 3 to 4 months, where we're hoping we'll have about 40 to 50 countries, which are now playing pickleball, adopt the rankings. So we hope to sanction about 1,000 events across the globe. So, that's what we hope to see in 2025. But from a marquee event perspective, the prize money, the top event, that's the ones that we are going to run and operate as an IP. And those are the six marquee events, basically.
Got it. And so even it will always be like these six events.
Correct.
Just and the six events will get bigger.
Just to give you an example, like we're also thinking about a league in India, for example, a league in China, a tour in China, a tour in India. So, you know, those events will sort of become the feeder events for the marquee events. So you could earn different amounts of points in a year to qualify for the Pickleball World Series. And then the pros in India would then play these lower prize money events, and our pros in China would play their events. And essentially, eventually in its maturity, let's say 5 years from now, every pro across the globe should be able to compare themselves with, you know, different pros in different areas, and even amateurs for that matter, with their ranking points. It's almost like earning an ATP ranking point or ITF ranking point, similar to that. That's what we envision this to be eventually. And that's where, you know, even our the way we're structuring this, we're not depending on broadcasting. We're basically saying this subscription model for Pickleball World Rankings, and we hope to have 1 million paid subscribers by the third year for the rankings. And that's what sustains a lot of the, you know, financial growth as well. So we know broadcasting is not there yet, and we know that's going to take a little bit of time. But the first thing we want to do is change the narrative, get more of the community involved, get more of the international community involved, and then create a sustainable business model from the ranking systems, basically.
Yeah, okay. We're trying to build global pro pickleball. That's what's going on here.
Absolutely.
What's so for 2025, first event in the U.S., you know where that's going to be? City, state, you have a venue?
New York or Las Vegas. Now we're, you know, hoping to do the finals of the team event either in Madison Square or the Sphere. I mean, we've not finalized anything right now, but this is
either of those process, either of those would be awesome.
Yeah, for real. Yeah.
So we're now speaking to the, you know, our event management company, speaking to the you know, locations, and seeing how feasible it is to do the finals, just, you know, so that we can get a performer in, we can get, you know, some entertainment in, and that's where we want the broadcasting also to happen and everything. That's where we want to change the narrative from, basically, just to the finals of the team event, and also the championship finals. So we'll have the men's finals, women's finals, mixed finals, and doubles finals, basically.
Yeah, if you change the Sphere to a pickleball for a day, you've won pickleball.
Yeah.
That's like, that'll for sure get the pickleball emoji to happen.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you know, the thought process is this. I mean, if it happens in 2025, great. If, you know, but that is what we're hoping. I mean, that is what we're kind of working towards. There's still a lot of moving parts. You know, there's the politics to work with. There's the, you know, essentially, but as I said, that, you know, for us, this is where we want to say, hey, I mean, we're not going to look at the politics. We're not going to say who the players are, who are going to play in it. We're just going to say we'll build the best product and we'll see who comes.
Right. Okay. So in evaluating all these potential markets for events, how do you rank the individual markets? What are some of the event or some of the markets that you're looking at? Like, that's going to be one of our biggest markets in 5 to 10 years, given what you're seeing from like a growth standpoint.
I mean, Zane can probably answer that question better because of his podcast numbers, you know, where they're being heard the most. I mean, I am always a firm believer that India is going to be a major, major contributor to pickleball in the long term. I mean, having said that, you know, that's a bias that I do have for India, but at the same time, I do believe China is going to be a huge market. And I think one of the reasons, Zane, that you know, China probably is not as high up on that list is the language barrier. So if we can do a Zane 2.0 and a, you know, Picklepod podcast 2.0 with, you know, Mandarin dubbing, I think you'll see those numbers go up drastically as well in China. Absolutely.
So
you should
here's the thing. I actually did two videos, but the real reason why my YouTube channel in Mandarin is not popping off in China is because they don't let you watch YouTube in
allow
China.
It, yeah.
So I found that out so after.
This is where, you know, we need to, you know, so we, for example, as we go into China, we're working with the local, you know, companies there and local social media there. And, you know, we're basically working with all those components. So essentially, I do believe that what you're seeing coming out of China is twofold. One, on one side, you have this huge rosy picture, which, you know, has been quoted in the last couple of articles, which is not there yet, but the potential is there. So while India, I have a bias because there's a lot of English-speaking people in India, so you will see that translate very quickly. But as China adopts pickleball, as you know, they get more involved into it, there's a national body. There's already a lot of people interested. Racket sports is huge in China, right? And it's huge in India. So we're big consumers of table tennis, badminton, and even tennis for that matter, both in India and China. So I think as these countries adopt pickleball, you will see a drastic growth in these two countries. So if I was a betting man, I would say India and China.
Yeah, this is wild. Okay. Last question for you. The rest of 2024, gearing up for the launch in 2025, what are some of the things you're working on? What does the rest of 2024 look like for the Pickleball World Series?
So we're working, we have a systematic plan. Obviously there's team sales, which we're working on, and the way we're devising team sales is we're being very selective with our team owners. So the way we're working on is we've got, two team owners we're targeting in India, a couple in the Middle East, which are going to be big if they come through. Then there are a couple in the US as well. So there's six teams, that's how we're targeting the next 6 months to focus on team sales one. We've got great ownership groups. We've got great interests from a celebrity standpoint, some of which is going to shake a lot of things, just like the announcement is going to shake those things as well. But most importantly, what we're working on is Pickleball World Rankings. I think our software for the World Rankings comes out in, after 4 months. We come out with 70 different countries' adaptability. We come out with six different languages to start with, including Japanese and Mandarin and Spanish for that matter. So, that adaptability in US, in Latin America, in Japan, in China, so I think that's where the next 6 months focus is on, to create a global Pickleball World software, ranking software. That's the next 6 months focus, basically.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to talk about?
Zane, you're going to play it?
I like this. Yeah.
I don't know if I can or not. I would love to travel around the world and play. I think that's a better conversation for later in the year. But absolutely. I think it would require some coordination with the other tours.
Correct. Just wanted to put it out there.
He's playing.
I still need to make it to India.
You do, yeah.
I do. I most definitely do. So,
cool.
Yeah.
All right. I like it, Pran. Thanks for coming on. Excited to see what you're able to build here. Some crazy
Absolutely.
Things on
Thank
the horizon.
You.
Yeah, this sounds Hopefully, exciting. Yeah. Thanks for popping on, Pran. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Zane. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, PicklePod. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie, Dyler has fun.